and welcome to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, the podcast all about the business side of the influencer industry. I'm Alice Audley, and I'm the founder of Blogosphere. We run events, a magazine, an influencer network, and now a podcast too, which I'll be presenting. If there are any questions about the influencer industry that you want answered, please do drop me an email at alice@blogospheremagazine.com. We're delighted to announce that Series 3 of Serious Influence has an exclusive sponsor, the music licensing platform, Licked. Licked provide commercial music from real labels for licensing into creators' content. It means that you can have great music on your videos without the fear of copyright claims or losing ad revenue. If you want to learn more about how you can legally use the music you love, be sure to check out Licked's website, licked.co. That's L-I-C-K-D.co. Today on Blogosphere Serious Influence, we have a special episode for you. It is a panel discussion all about diversity within influencer marketing campaigns without tokenism. The panel is hosted by Blogosphere's creative director, Elaine Malone, and the panelists are Kemi Alamoru, Lottie Lamour, Grace Victory, and Jamie Windust.
So first thing first, I'm going to let you guys introduce yourself, starting with Kemi.
Hi, I'm Kemi Alamoru. I'm the features editor at Galdem Magazine, which is a magazine for women and non-binary people of colour. We sort of try and get those perspectives out there in the media, probably making me a perfect fit for this panel.
Hi, everyone. My name's Lottie Lamour. I'm a plus-size LGBTQ activist and a real-life lesbian human being. Hello, it's nice to meet you all. In my day job as well, I also work as head of emerging talent at TikTok.
Hi, I'm Grace Victory. I'm a blogger, influencer person. I talk about mental health, plus size fashion. Been full-time about 5 years, in the game about 9. I'm an OG. And that's about it.
Ding dong. I am Jamie Windust. I'm a writer, model, and public speaker. I identify as non-binary, and I mainly use my channels and work to speak about trans and LGBTQ plus issues across the media, and Blogosphere kindly named me as Fashion Influencer of the Year,
yes.
Which I'm sure you can tell.
Okay, so first question. On the whole, in 2019, do you think that brands thought about being diverse with their campaigns? And if they did think about it, do you think that they thought about it correctly or executed it correctly?
Oh, I definitely think there was some thought there. It's one of those things that it's really difficult to get if it's not ingrained into your brand. So if you feel that you're doing a diverse campaign, and you look at your list in front of you and you maybe have one black person, you maybe have 3 other people that are blonde and thin, and then maybe you have somebody who might identify as non-binary, you might think, oh yay, I've ticked all the boxes, woohoo! But there's so much more to delve into with diversity. There's diversity within diversity. There's lots of things that need to be looked at. And I feel like maybe we're not quite there yet. What do you guys think?
Yeah, but I think they're thinking about diversity. I think it's definitely on people's minds. Whether it's on their minds for the right reason is an entirely different question. Are you trying to weigh in on the diversity conversation because you want to look like you're paying attention, or is it that you truly want to be transformative? As you were just saying, sometimes it can feel very tokenistic to have a few people be visible for that brand, but when you look at the brands themselves, who's in senior management, who is on the creative team even, and I think that's where the diversity thing starts to feel a bit like a buzzword and not really like any real work at all.
Jamie or Grace?
I think it can be quite, yeah, tokenistic. And it's really awkward when you are a part of a campaign that's meant to be diverse. And that happened to me this year. When you're part of a diverse campaign and it's not diverse, and obviously, like being mixed race and plus size, when you approach for a campaign and you're like, I don't know, yeah, ethnic or whatever makes you so different and diverse, you don't automatically think about, is it going to be a diverse campaign? You think if they've chosen you, it's going to be diverse. And then the campaign comes out and you're like, oh no. And especially if, like, there's parts of me that I know can be watered down. So, like, I still have an hourglass figure. I'm light skin. I'm not dark skin. It's very, very awkward. And I think that brands think by getting, like, a couple of people that look a bit different, it's going to be like an A-star campaign. And a lot of the time, it's not. And like Kemi was saying, it needs to start at the top. Like, is your company diverse? Because then it filters down, and when it filters down, it's very authentic. You can tell with the authentic campaigns and the non-authentic campaigns, and I've been involved in both. And the non-authentic, it's very awkward for the brand, and you know, they get dragged, and rightly so. But when you're involved in it, it's like, oh my god. So yeah, that's my take.
I think I spoke this week about how, like, working with brands, I feel, is like something that is mutual exploitation, because what we're finding now is that so many of them come to you and they wave money at you and they're like, we want you to do this. And then, like Grace said, you know, we kind of realize that they're not as diverse as we once thought. And that, for me, primarily comes through the ways in which the team and the actual shoot and the logistics of the shoot, or the ways in which the hair and makeup team, or even from like the car, and you know, all the aspects of it should be looked into when you're doing a diverse campaign, because you're essentially nurturing a diverse talent that you need to be looking after. I also have done campaigns that were not as diverse as I once, or as I would have wanted, and I think that's really frustrating. And what we need to do is kind of almost protest that sometimes and just not do them and then see what they do, because then what they'll do is they'll make even bigger mistakes and it's an even more righteous cause to drag them wherever they need to be dragged.
Yeah, so do you think that the diversity of a campaign or like a press trip does impact an influencer's decision to take part, Kemi?
Well, I'm not an influencer, but what I can say anecdotally is that it's very visible when a trip has gone out and there aren't that many black women on the trip, or there aren't that many East Asian women on the trip, because you can just see from images. And this conversation's been sort of swirling around this year as to like who gets the best opportunities. And sometimes, you know, brands might have a certain deal with a woman of color where she gets to help with the campaign on her feed, so you're buying into her audience and you get to tap into that demographic. But did she get to go on the trip, and was she one of the highest paid people in that whole brand strategy? And so that's where it starts to look a bit unsavory. But also the second question is, do brands care enough? Because at the end of the day, they have the massive streams of revenue. This is how influencers make their money, is through brands. So do they really care if a black influencer can see that there was no black influencers on the trip, when is she going to bite the hand that feeds her?
Yeah, for sure. I feel like everything you said just there, like, really resonated, because there's been so many times where you've you've seen a campaign and you think, okay, there could have been extra things that could have been done there. But actually, have they really tapped into the talent that they've used? And have they spoken to that talent and gone, okay, we'd love to use you. Can you tell us about some other people that we could perhaps use in this campaign? Can you tell us the best way that we could, you know, use your talent, use your platform to get this message across in a genuine way?
Because and pay for it.
And pay for it. Thank you. Yes, and pay
payment
for it.
Is important.
It's so important. And brands should be paying people not only for the platform that they have, but for their expertise and for their knowledge in an area that perhaps the brand doesn't know about just yet. That's something that I think is missed every single time that there's a diverse campaign that's put out that doesn't really hit the mark, is that they're just ticking a box. It's just doing something that they think is going to make them look good, when really that change needs to be ingrained from the inside and then kind of making a stand without making a statement. It needs to be natural and it needs to be something that they've really thought about.
If I'm honest, I just think brands don't care. That's the only explanation for it in this day and age. Because if I think about doing a campaign, or if I think about, I want to launch a clothing line, who am I going to get to model the clothes? Straight away, I'm thinking non-binary. I'm thinking dark skin. I'm thinking fat. I'm thinking less abled. I'm thinking 40 plus. Like, we just know. So I don't quite get it. But then if you look at the majority of brands that have money, they're white and they're privileged. They don't understand what it's like to live a life and not be like that. So I think I get quite frustrated talking constantly about like diversity and inclusion, because it's like, no, brands are just ignoring us now. Like, it's not even a joke. Using social media to drag a brand can sometimes look quite tacky, but honestly, that's the only way they listen a lot of the times. And there's a particular campaign that came out recently that wasn't as diverse as it should have been. And I was contractually bound with them, so I had to like email them privately. And then it looks like that you don't care when we do care, but a lot of the time it's like the only way to do it, and they pay attention and respond, is if it's publicly.
The emotional turmoil in being somebody yes. who is diverse, being put into a diverse campaign to then find out that actually it's not diverse in the bloody first place, is ridiculous. Like, that, I know which thing you're talking about.
We all know.
We all know. And it was horrible because every single person on that campaign that thought it was something that it wasn't was emailing around everyone and talking to the whole community of influencers, and going, this is so bad, I'm never going to work with them again, it's never going to be a thing. And that's something that I think brands don't think about as well, as we all talk. We all
talk. And we know what everyone's getting paid. So yes. Come correct.
Good. I think, not to flip the script, but I also think you need, like, the influencers and the talent do need to take some responsibility, because one of the biggest things that I find is within the queer scene when it comes to influencers is that you'll get like your white cisgendered, like, gay hot dads or like uncles doing like campaigns that are really great, and then it will come out that it's not diverse, and I'm like, why are you surprised? You were booked. Look at the rep of talent that we're here. And I think what I've started to do over the past year is always, always, always ask, even if it's just like a panel or if it's any form of work that is going to become focused into a content, who's there? Who's shooting it? Just investigate it a bit more, because I think often we can get swayed by just the opportunity and the exposure from the brand. But actually, you need to make sure that the job you're doing is socially sustainable.
Can I just add to that? I completely agree, because I obviously come at this from the editorial side. So like, once all of this has happened and it's you've been in the shoe, and then the press release comes out, the press release comes to me, and I can see straight away what a brand is really about. First of all, if they're contacting Galdem, they're contacting us because they want our audience. But if our audience aren't in the campaign, it's like, why do you think this is really for us? And even when we're working with brands, you can feel that they think just the fact that they've got in touch with us is a tick box. But if you have to like push back on certain things, like, well, we want this sort of talent to be involved, and they're like, why don't we just go for a slim, light-skinned girl? And it's like, because have you actually read our site? Obviously, that person can also be in the campaign. But if there's multiple people in the campaign, it needs to be representative of our whole readership. And so you put people in the position where obviously we need that stream of revenue to like create advertorials and also create our own campaigns from an editorial perspective. But like, how many times should we have to say no because they at the top can't come with the right brief?
And do you guys think that brands pay people differently depending on their gender, their race, their disability, rather than what they're actually worth? And do you have any examples of this without naming names?
I have an example. I have plenty of examples. I accidentally once got an email from a brand. Well, no, I got an email asking to be in a campaign. It was just a YouTube video. And it had the fee. And I was like, well, that's too low, but okay. And was negotiating. And then I got loads of other emails from the brands. They were asking other bloggers to be in this campaign. Same following. I think I had even more on Instagram. Same campaign deliverables. I think they were offering them 50% more money. And I was like, wow. And that's just one. And like that was like directly. I was reading my emails and you just can't believe it. And I turned down that campaign simply because the fee was too low anyway. But I loved the brand. But I was like, I just have to, for my own morals, I have to say no to that because it's bang out of order. And I have like a little group of friends that have the same following as me. And I always ask them, I've got this campaign, I think you're doing it too. Like, what are you getting paid? And we talk. And a lot of the time, there is a massive difference. And I think I've also been on the flip side of that, where I'm getting paid way more than other people in the campaign. And I get that it changes dependent on following sometimes, completely understand that. But a lot of the time, when you're booked on a job, it's with your peers who have the same sort of following, and the money can dramatically differ. And it's very awkward. You know, I reply back to that email to my manager, and I was like, you need to just let them know that I know, and I've seen this. But it's awkward because you could be blacklisted from the brand, even though you love them, and it can just get very murky. But you do have to send strong in, like, with who you are, and just know that that wasn't meant for you, that brand is an ex, and keep it moving. You know, it's happened to, like, all of us, and it's shit.
I actually stopped doing fashion content because of this very reason. So up until earlier on this year, I was predominantly a plus-size fashion blogger, influencer, creative, whatever word we're using these days. And there was one particular experience with one particular brand who had promised me verbatim that they were going to do a certain thing with me. They were going to pay me money, they were going to bring me to a thing, and it was going to be great. And then it got closer to the time for this thing, I was emailing them, I was getting ignored, and then I later found out through the grapevine, because again, we all talk, that other people had been chosen for this particular thing. So I called the PR out and said, you know, hey, you told me, I've got this in writing here, that this is what was going to happen. And they were very apologetic, all that kind of stuff. That wasn't a situation that was unique. That was something that had happened before. That was something that unfortunately keeps happening, especially in such a small community as plus size fashion blogging, because it's a tiny community, tiny opportunities. It's mad. And I decided I didn't want to play that game anymore. I just didn't want to do that because I knew that there were people that were being paid more than me that were doing less work than I was offering to do, less things than I was willing to do for what I was being paid. And that was quite painful to me. So I decided to take that power back and start doing things that I wanted to do that gave my soul happiness, which is talking about LGBT stuff and body confidence and things like that. And actually now I'm much happier. I'm paid a lot more than I was previously because I'm open about these kind of things. So it was a really bloody scary thing to do at the time. Really scary thing to do at the time because that's all I'd known for 5 years was fashion. But it was worth the risk. And it was worth the risk to listen to my heart and go, no, I'm not subscribing to this narrative anymore. I want to take that power back. And that's what I did.
I think in terms of just opportunity, not in terms of like a black girl getting paid less than a white girl, I think just the opportunities for a black girl or a fat girl or a less abled girl, I think that they're just less anyway. Like you see the same type of influencer on billboards I just saw one on the drive here. I was like, oh, okay. You see them everywhere. You never see a fat girl on a billboard. You see the same influencer doing a collection with a brand, you never see a fat girl doing it. It's over and over again. So it gets to the point as well where it's really awkward for us because we're like, well, that campaign's a little bit shit, but I've got bills to pay. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's trying to, you know, remain who you are, firm-footed, grounded, have your morals intact, but also we all need to work. And it's like Lottie, like she had to quit what she was doing because it wasn't paying her bills and it was making her, you know, unhappy. So it feels like we're having these conversations over and over again, and we're taking the smallest steps forward. And that's why I say it's not always down to the marginalised to teach you about the marginalised, because it is fucking tiring to keep going over and over again. Like, I'm actually bored of it sometimes, especially with, like, size and weight and health and all the stuff that gets thrown at us when we're just literally here posting an ASOS outfit on the gram. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
I think in a similar ilk to Lottie, it's made me realise that this, you know, this has never been my full-time job. It's something that I do to fund my activism and fund my magazine and fund other things. It's something that I had a massive deliberation with, because I know that a lot of the queer people that follow me are anti-capitalist. They, you know, don't believe in assimilation politics, which is basically like just becoming the herd, essentially, and becoming a sheep to follow everybody else. And it was a real tough one. But now I've decided, after failure through it and after realizing that the payment schedules and not only the indifference in payment, but the lateness and the absolute atrocity that comes with that, an amazing writer called Paula Ackman put on Twitter yesterday a massive thread on what to do if you are not being paid on time, what clauses to put in your invoice, which I would thoroughly recommend. But that made me realise that I was like, I'm not going to centre this in what I'm doing as the activist and in as the change maker. This isn't... It's made me realise that brand activism is in no way the peak of what marginalised people should be doing. It should almost be a cherry on top. If that's your job, rock and roll. But it doesn't have to be if you don't want it to be. And I think the payment frustrations have meant that, unfortunately, it's difficult for it to be your full-time job.
Yeah, I'm just going to, like, go back to something that was said before, in that this is a tiny industry, so people do talk. And talking is actually, like, paramount, especially if you are in a marginalized community. There have been several times at which, like, me and other members of Galdem have been asked to talk at a thing or contribute work to a thing for a brand, and then we found out that other people might not be being paid at all. So Liv, there was quite a public situation where Liv Little wasn't being paid by a brand, and then it transpired that other people were being paid by the brand. And so that was publicly called out. But then you get to the point where, you know, is the case to unionize as influencers so that everybody knows what everybody is being paid? Because you can't have the discrepancy where someone's getting zero and somebody else is getting 150. Another thing that I was going to say is Yomi Adegoke actually covered this in The Independent, and I can see Stephanie nodding, which is weird because you are an example I've written on my phone, because Stephanie told the BBC that she did some work during Fashion Week and she wasn't being paid, and she found out that other people were being paid. But if people don't talk about money, how do you even know if you're being effed over? Like, you have to have some real transparency and you have to have some accountability. You have to be able to go to the brand and for the brand to care that other people in the same campaign don't like it. And sometimes the answer is if you find out that you're being paid way more and you don't like that people around you aren't being paid at all, then you have to step away and say, I don't want to be a part of this either. You can't pay me double and expect me to undercut somebody else. That's not like what I believe politically. If you do have that political belief, you should just step away. And then they have no event or they have no campaign because everyone stepped out.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because we're talking about diversity without tokenism, do you think that if there is, say, for example, a LGBT plus campaign going on, that there should be diversity within that diversity? Lottie, I know that you have opinions on this.
Yeah, I'm so passionate about this particular subject, because when Pride season comes around, you always see the same few faces in a campaign. And unfortunately, most of the time, they're usually male, thin, cisgendered, white, beautiful-looking human beings, which we absolutely need in campaigns. I'm not saying they shouldn't be in there. They should. But there's hardly ever, if I'm honest, a lesbian that's in a campaign or a bisexual woman in a campaign. There's also diversity within that. So let's find fat lesbians, let's find black lesbians, let's find Southeast Asian lesbians, let's find Muslim lesbians. There's so many different nuances within this community, within all communities, really, that aren't tapped into. And there are so many talented human beings that just want to be a part of something and want to feel that they're seen, I think is probably the most important part of it. It's just, I used to read Diva magazine, which is a magazine for lesbian women and bisexual women. It's great. And I can remember reading it when I was a kid and not seeing anyone that looked like me. And it made me feel really ostracized from my own community. And it was really difficult for me when I was growing up because everyone that I knew that was gay and that was a woman all looked the same and didn't look like me. And this is why I'm making it a point that this is the thing that I want to focus on now, because there will be other people that look like me, that feel the same way as me, that aren't seen. And I just think that there's so much more that brands can tap into to not only appear genuine themselves and appear that they care, whether they do internally or not is another thing, whatever. But like Jamie, I know, has been doing talks with several brands about the importance of diversity within LGBT campaigns. When it comes to Pride season, I can be hired, if there's any brands in the room, hello. I can be hired to go into a company and talk about why it's important that we still have Pride, the reasons why we have Pride, and why there's so many different acronyms within our acronym and what they all mean, because I feel like it's important to educate a company on why they're doing something before they actually go out and go and do it.
I almost would rather be, I know this might come as a surprise, I would rather be doing that consultancy rather than being on the billboard. Because this Pride was the first Pride that I worked or was in that capacity of doing campaigns, and it was the worst time of the year for me just because it was so mind-bogglingly just confusing and barbaric and exploitative, and I just found the whole process frustrating because, as we've all said, we're a small community, and then this sounds really twatish, but the caliber of people that these brands think they can choose from is again a small pool. So we all talk, and you know, if we shrink that pool again down to the trans and non-binary community, when we all get the call, because we will get the call, it's always the most marginalized of us that don't get the job. It's always the non-binary people of color that are like, oh, did you get that? And I'm like, yeah. Or the plus size people or the disabled people who just aren't put in. So I would rather go behind the scenes.
So as a small community, what can we all, like everyone, do to encourage these diverse communities to step up and be influencers themselves? I think, Grace, if I'm right in this, you started YouTube because you didn't see anyone like you.
Yeah, so I started YouTube in 2011, so a long time ago. I was watching a lot of the vloggers on there, bloggers on there, and I was like, no one talks like me. Everyone was really posh, which is kind of the same now, which is interesting. So yeah, everyone was really posh, and most people were white, and if they were mixed race or black, they were thin. And I was like, yeah, I love everyone, but no one is like me. So I just started making videos, and it grew and grew and grew. But what I will say is that I encourage people to do what they want, speak their truth. If your passion is fashion, go out there and do it. Makeup, activist, whatever it is, do it. But we can't just skip over the fact that it's going to be harder for you if you look different, or if you talk about stuff that brands think are really like, oh, that's a bit too controversial. Because when I started, I used to swear. I mean, I still swear now. And I remember being told, we can't work with you because you swear. Like, I'm like, I'm a grown-ass woman. So it's harder. And being plus size, when the first sort of brand campaigns were coming on the scene back in 2015, when no one was really making a lot of money, I was never picked. It took me so long to get like regular income. So I encourage everyone to do what they want to do, but it does take a lot longer. There are some people that just literally blow up overnight, and some people it's more of a gradual thing, and it's been quite gradual for me. But what I will say is, like, your, you know, white privileged friends or whatever in the industry, like, are you emailing brands asking if the campaign that you're involved in is diverse? Press trips are a massive thing. If I see one more press trip of the same people, I'm gonna die. And I'm thinking, you literally follow me and you follow all my friends, you follow other fat girls and other black girls, so you're fully aware that we exist. Why are you still on these press trips? And even I do it. So being plus size, I'm still aware that there are different body types of plus size. Not everyone has an hourglass figure. There's, you know, different shapes. Some plus women have small bums and small boobs. That's a thing. So when I do campaigns now, I have to ask, by the way, is anyone involved in this that's also plus size but doesn't look like me? And they're like, So it's just a lot of work. And I do think that we need to encourage people that their story matters as well. No matter what you look like, what class you are, what race you are, your story is individual to you, and people need to hear it, and people want to see you. Whether it's just because you love clothes, I still want to see that. So yeah, I encourage everyone to just do what they want to do and work hard. And if it's meant to be full-time for you, make it full-time. If not, it can be a hobby. I still have the days where I'm like, I am done with this industry. And some days I really, really like it. I think everyone can relate to waking up sometimes, and no matter what career you're in, thinking, this ain't for me anymore. But then you remember why you do it, like why I started. Because as 12 years old, I was looking at Kate Moss. First of all, she's white. That's never going to be me. And she's like a supermodel and very, very thin. And that's why I started YouTube, was I wanted to see someone with like cellulite and stretch marks and things that wobble. So yeah, do what you want to do, do it. But just know that we are fighting a cause that's a lot bigger than us.
So we heard from Lorna yesterday, Lorna Lux, that she sometimes thinks that this whole industry is a bit of a posh person's game. Do you agree? And what do you think can be done about it?
I think trying to start in the media or the creative industries always feels like a posh person's game, because at the beginning, the streams of revenue aren't, there's not like entry level roles to becoming an influencer. And if you're talking about from a media perspective, the entry level roles never go to people who actually want to enter at the entry level. It goes to people who have years of experience. And so like when you're working in an industry that pays you really low pay to begin with, then how do you get into that if you are working class and if you aren't a person who they want to give the clothes to straight off the bat? How are you going to do a clothes haul with no money if that's like one of the best ways to get people's attention? Like you have to have some support to get into these media jobs. I think that just, yeah.
Yeah, I remember like it was like a thing. I think it still is a thing. It was a thing a few years ago to like do hauls every week. And I was very poor a few years ago. And I remember like my friend telling me, oh, don't you just do what we all do? Go to the shop, buy the clothes, show them on YouTube or Instagram, and then return them. That was a thing. So there was always these little secrets that people were doing to like sort of pretend like you can afford to do this when really you can't. And I think that it is a lot of privileged people, because if you don't get paid on time, none of us get paid on time, but if you don't get paid on time and you haven't got a regular cash flow, you can't pay your rent. Whereas if someone has enough, you know, a rich husband or, I don't know, a rich dad can be like, by the way, I've got no money, can you help me out? They can do that. I can't do that. I literally have no one that I can fall back on ever. So it does feel like that. And I've been doing this a long time and I haven't seen it change. I think it changes in my world because you follow people that are diverse and aren't always middle class. But I think at the top of people getting six-figure deals and billboards and massive campaigns, they are the same people every single year. Yeah, it's just a bit of a nightmare.
I think it is possible for somebody who perhaps doesn't have as much money as other people or as much access to privilege as other people. It's possible, but you have to work 30 times harder than anybody else that's doing that current thing. Like, I work full-time whilst also doing this, so my spare time, every waking moment of my spare time, is dedicated to trying to build this platform that I have and use it in an appropriate way. I come from a broken family. My family basically is just my mum and my stepdad. I don't have anybody else to fall back on. They are in a non-privileged situation themselves. Everything I've got currently, I'm extremely privileged for where I am right now, but I've worked my ass off to get it. I'm probably a lot harder than most people that have that privilege currently have done so. So it's possible, but you just have to be super realistic in the knowledge that you are going to have to work super hard to do it. And can you really give that time, that expertise to doing it? And also, it's fine if you can't. Like, it's absolutely fine. And you should not ever beat yourself up if you're looking at someone that's like doing their 10th ASOS haul of the month and you're thinking, shit, I really wish I could do that. Don't worry about it. Like, it's fine. Your time will come. Do whatever it is that's possible for you right now and do that to the best of your ability. And people will resonate with it. People will understand why you're doing that thing and they'll see themselves in what you're doing.
If a non-diverse brand want to become diverse and be inclusive, what can they do while doing it in a genuine, authentic way?
Hand over the reins, I think, is one of the biggest things. Recently, I worked and have now a great relationship with, very surprisingly for me, because I hated them throughout my childhood, UGG. I've never wear them until now. Well, obviously, I would wear them all the time. But they basically, for Pride, were one of the only brands that basically were like, we want you to do a dinner to launch this product. What do you want to do? And we're literally just like, go for it. Here's the product. The product isn't going to be featured. It's going to be like maybe dotted around the room. But they wanted to genuinely have a conversation where everyone was paid the exact same. We had a bougie dinner. And it was to not only chat about Pride, but to also educate, because they had all of their PR staff there, all of their internal and external staff that work on campaigns, so they know exactly what to do next year. And for me, that was brilliant.
I suppose if a brand is talking about diversity, when they're having that conversation and they're looking around the room, if they can only see people that come from the exact same background as them and look just like them, then what is the point of launching a diversity campaign so that you externally look diverse before you've even done any work to change the structure of your company? Diversity cannot be an external activity. There is no point in talking about diversity until we're blue in the face unless you are going to top down reorganize your institution so that those people are already there. Then all of your campaigns won't be one-off diversity campaigns. All of your campaigns will reflect your workforce, the audience that you're trying to capture. I think that's the biggest thing that I can hear from everyone on this panel, is that we all love being paid to, you know, be a part of a campaign or a panel to talk about diversity, because people need to be able to survive. But these companies need to stop coming to us during Pride Month, during Black History Month, during a time when people are talking about, you know, being plus size. It has to be all the time. I want you to come and talk to me at any given time. I don't want you to only talk to me when you want to access women of color and you want to tap into that audience on that day. And I think that's where we need to get to, is trying to figure out who is BSing. And I think it's all of them.
A big thanks to Kemi, Lottie, Grace and Jamie for coming on the show.
You've been listening to Blogosphere, Serious Influence, with me, Alice Audley. Join us next week for a brand new episode. Until then, be sure to check out blogosphere.magazine.com for more influencer industry updates. And why not invest in a subscription to our essential magazine,
whilst you're there.